I'm actually not used to standing at podiums, and so if I fall over, Frank said that he'd catch me. So keep an eye on him. I'm Michelle. I'm powerless over money and under-earning. And I was asked to speak today about structure and under-earning. And there is a lot I could say about that, but I do want to start out with the first three things that I heard that really made the program stick with me, because for years I couldn't really get myself into the program. And I kept debting and I kept falling back, and I just couldn't get my, I couldn't really get any sobriety. And there were three things that I heard. One was that, and this really helped me because I never really thought like this, but the first thing I heard was that God works with what we have, because God cannot work with what we don't have. And that to me was like a revelation, because being a debtor and using charge cards and so forth, I was always working with what I did not have. Whatever I came home with after shopping or whatever I was doing during the day, it wasn't something that God had really, it wasn't mine. I don't know how to explain that other than to say that I was always trying to make something work by putting things together that weren't mine to work on. And so I was always kind of struggling to find a way to earn money, but the whole time I was debting, so it wasn't going to come about. So that saying, God works with what you have and not with what you don't have, really stuck with me. And another thing I heard was never scorn a small beginning. And as a debtor, you know, it has to be a big beginning. I don't want a little beginning. I want a great big beginning, and I want a guarantee on that beginning. And I want the date that the guarantee is due. In other words, I want to step into something with no fear, no apprehension, no risk, no nothing, and that's what I want. And so for me to really take to heart that never scorn a small beginning has really been helpful to me, because I'm self-employed, and a lot of times I have to do things that it really is a small beginning, and I don't know where it's going to lead to. But for me, just to pick up the phone and be structured is a small beginning, or to have structure around my workday, that is the beginning for me. The outcome isn't something that I can control, but the structure is. And then the last thing that happened is that I was in a meeting. I'll never forget this. I was in a meeting, and I was still debting. It was going to be a few years before I stopped debting. But I heard this saying I was in a meeting and I met this person who, and she said I could share this, that she had said to the group that she only had $11 to her name. And in my mind, I was happy for her. I thought, you know what? You have something to work with. I mean, I was like way down in debt. I had no clue what was going to happen to me. But my point in that is that when we go to meetings and we listen to other people and we listen to their stories, we never know where we're going to get hope, and we never know where that hope is going to come from. And that incident really gave me hope. I mean, I was like, so you'll make it. And this person did. And I guess the one thing that I want to say as a debtor under earner is that for me, it's really important to have structure. It's really important to have discipline and structure, because I can't have any consistency or self-care if I don't have discipline and structure. And as an addict and somebody who's really strong-willed, that's the first thing I don't want. I really just don't want structure. I want to do what I want to do. Right, everybody knows that mantra. And you know, it hasn't worked, and I've had to surrender that my under-earning, you know, I have had to surrender that's my under-earning, that's my strong will, that's my stubbornness, that's my somehow thinking that I know how to manage my time better than my higher power does. So for me, things turned around for me when I admitted that I was an under-earner, when I had my under-earning crash, and when I had structure, when I developed structure in my life after that. And I really didn't have much to go on. I had a business, but at the time I really only had about, I don't know, $123 to work with. And no, not even that much, because I had to pay my car tabs that day in order not to debt. But I had very little money to start with when I decided to keep going in my own business. But the three things that I remembered was never scorn a small beginning, which in my mind is to always stay humble. The story about the $11, which in my mind is a story of hope. And the other one is God works with what you have, not with what you don't have, which is, in my mind, you know, you don't need to debt today. One day at a time, you don't need to debt. So that's really my story. The structure and the discipline that I developed during those years really gave me a very good, abundant life. And as much as this program has been kind of an up and down for me, and actually kind of a down for me lately, I still have to remember that, you know, the program, the structure, and the discipline gave me, I mean, a lot of things that I can't even see today. I mean, I was able to get out of about $80,000 in debt. I ended up having a very prosperous business. It was life on a whole different level that I was really, it was the first time for me that my life had been that that peaceful, and that I had so many relationships that healed, that I had money in the bank, savings, and all of that. It was all because of the working the steps, working with the sponsors, and really taking the tools seriously. And then getting all the support that I have been given in DA, and then all the service that I have been willing to give to. All of those, I think, come to full circle when we're in a 12-step program. And then the last thing I wanted to say is that I read this thing, actually, last Tuesday night. I went to the Tuesday DA meeting, and this is really, for me, this is really, really important. Warning signs for DA mid-timers, because there, to be honest, there's been some lacks in my program. I was really on a spending spree last year, and a lot of things caught up with me this year. And so it's like that old saying, don't look where you have fallen, look where you slipped. So I really had to go back and look where I had slipped. And I slipped in a lot of places, and you know, shopping and not being structured were some of them. But it says here that, you know, where can you slip for a mid-timer? Not having a sponsor or being closed to letting others give you feedback. Staying vague about spending plans and numbers. I did that. Spending savings allotment every month or dipping into savings a lot. Continuing to under-earn and maintain an attitude of self-pity and victimhood. Sporadic PRGs, erratic completion of PRG tasks. It goes on. But those are a lot of the things that were tiny slips for me. And tiny slips can add to a fall. You know, it can add to a crash. It can add to another round of having to learn everything all over again. And so what I have learned is I have to have the same amount of vigilance that I have after having had success through this program. I have to have the same amount of vigilance that I had as when I was at the very bottom. So in other words, like my sponsor said, you know, we're all just one step away from the ditch. And when times are good, it's really easy to forget that. Or a certain kind of comfort comes in, or a certain kind of, you know, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And no matter how much time I have had in the program, the disease is going to continue to be cunning, baffling, and powerful. And the only thing that I have to sustain my recovery is consistency, discipline, and structure. So that's what I wanted to say about under-earning and structure. And then I just wanted to close with one thing, is that, you know, when I realized that I was an under-earner, first of all, I didn't know that. But apparently my sponsor did know that, which she never told me. But anyway, I remember calling her and saying, you know, with the realization that I was an under-earner. And she said, yeah, I know that. And I'm like, you do? How did you know that? Anyway, my point is that somebody, you know, if you think you're an under-earner, and that thought is going through your mind, sometimes it's the best thing to do to check in with people that know you and ask, you know, do you think that I'm an under-earner? Do you see this in me? Do you, whatever, and ask for their feedback. Because, you know, I think I had kept that hidden for years, but in reality, it was such a relief. It was such a relief to know that about myself. It was like, oh, now I know that. I have that information. I can work the steps around it, and I can go in more toward the healing instead of the hiding. You know, I didn't know that I was hiding that. And so anybody who is really struggling with under-earning, what I did during the first part, you know, step one, was I would ask my higher power to give me information every morning about my under-earning. And every morning I wrote, like, about, you know, for half an hour, 45 minutes about my under-earning and asked guidance from my higher power. And then after that, I was done with it. I was done. I couldn't spend the whole day under-earning, writing about my under-earning. So, which was the paradox of it. But that's why I had to put a boundary around it. I had to put a limit around it. And I actually kind of had to structure my own awarenesses of being an under-earner. So, but then I think Frank is up here next. Right, Frank?
Hi, ladies, two guys, three guys, a guy just showed up. I'm Frank, I'm irresponsible, incredibly irresponsible with money. For my daily practice is called the HAL program, and I'll tell you a little bit about what that means for those of you who don't know. HAL stands for, it's an acronym for honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. That's what the H-O-W stands for. That comes from Chapter 4 of the Big Book, and it describes the attributes that one needs to recover using the 12-step program. It's a structured plan for working the 12 steps, the object of it being that at the end of a year, more or less, you will have gone through the entire 12 steps. And so it's a very structured program. Within our DA program, there are many kinds of sponsors and sponsorship ideas. There's not one that's better than another. There's one that's maybe better for you than for me. So it is nothing more than that. It's just sponsorship of a structured kind. It's one of the choices that we can make. Do if we want to work that kind of program, or if we know someone who we admire and we want to work the kind of program that they do. So it's simply that. The HAL format originally came from OA, and since it's been successful in OA, very successful in OA, then it has come to DA, AA, GA, and whether other A's there may be for people who like this kind of program, because the fact is that there's just one set of 12 steps, you know, and it works here, it works there. Just change a few words, but the principles are the same. And so it is not for everyone. It's a choice a person makes about whether they want to do it or whether they want to do something else, and there's no bad choice there. I am not a spokesman for HAL. I was asked to speak on this subject. I'm gladly doing it, but what I have to say is my opinion and not necessarily representative of someone else's opinion. So please keep that in mind as a disclaimer. Here's what I do daily. First, I call my sponsor every day at the same time. He's agreed to set aside 15 minutes of his life to help me recover. And I respect that. And I call him. I never miss a call. And I'm rarely ever late, maybe a minute or two, because of that respect that I have for his gift to me. It keeps me, what that call does is it keeps me working the program every day. And I need to do that because I lack focus. I can't stay on a subject for very long. I see something shiny and I wander off. And then I wander back. I've got an apartment full of unfinished projects. I cannot remember who I am and what I'm doing without that daily call. It reminds me of who I am, and I need that at least once a day, but actually many times more during the course of the day to keep me in the path of recovery. I'm an under-earner particularly at the moment. I've been other things at other times, but right now I'm an under-earner. The fog rolls in for me quickly. If I didn't call every day, it would be a week or so, and then I would start wandering off, and if I a month would go by, and then I would be completely lost somewhere, but pretty much unaware of it, and pretty much unaware of what I need to do. I don't think I could pass a test for ADD. I doubt if many of us could. I record now. We keep it fun, my sponsor and I. We actually co-sponsor each other. One year I call him, the next year he calls me. Sometimes this is very serious, you know, and sometimes we have confrontations about things, but mainly we keep it pleasant because there's hardly any point in recovering if it isn't fun. He makes up a name each night, a false name, when he answers the phone. For instance, the other night I called up and he says, "This is Dalai Lama." I said, "Well, hello, Dolly." We do that kind of stuff. We trade jokes each night. And it takes a long time to find a joke that I haven't found before. A large part of my time goes to finding jokes. And we have joke slips. You know, if he doesn't think it's a very good joke, then he calls it a slip, and then I have to do two jokes the next night. The point is recovery's got to be fun. You got to have some lightness in your life. You really can't have it all be seriousness and drudgery and, oh, my God, I'm a terrible person. So those phone calls are not drudgery to me. I like my sponsor. He's a great guy. And we have fun, and we get the stuff done we need to get done. I report my spending every day. This is not for him. This is for me. He doesn't care. And as I sponsor people, they report their spending to me. I don't care. You know, they can spend their money on whatever they want to. It is not for me to be the financial policeman for my sponsor or sponsees. It is for them to understand how they're spending their money. There are two issues there. One is that they're afraid, often, sponsees, to tell me what they want to buy because they're embarrassed by it. And the other thing they're afraid of is telling me what it is because it may be something they think I'll judge them about. None of those things are true. And in that call and reporting the finances that you do each day, it's very important to be very honest about that and not expect that you're going to be judged because of it, because that's not a part of the process. One of the things that I used to do is I used to go to Caribou, and I'd have a large Americano every day. That was $3, and I'd tip them $1. And I'd call that in every day, $4 a cup of coffee. And after a while, I got to thinking, gee, $4 a day, that's $120 a month. Do I want to spend that on coffee? That's nuts. And so I stopped doing it. I didn't need him to tell me to stop doing it. He didn't. I told me to stop doing it because it was expensive and I couldn't afford it. When I report my expenses, I begin to see a pattern. And when I hear people reporting expenses, I hear a pattern. But what it is clarity again. It makes me aware. I used to get $100 and put it in my billfold, and 2 days later I'd look at it, my billfold would be gone. And I think, oh, God, I must have given somebody the wrong change, or I've lost some money. And I would be very worried about where that money went. Well, I don't do that anymore because I know where the money went. I can look it up. And because of that, I'm a lot more frugal than I used to be. Now, my wife, if she were here, would find that hard to believe that I'm more frugal than I used to be. But I am, by my standards. I write something based on our literature every day. The first in the HAL program, there are seven pre-prepared questions, and those questions take you through the first three steps of the program. And so, the first question, I don't remember it exactly, but it's basically write a history of your financial life. You know what it's been like right from the beginning. Now, that can't be done in a day. It usually takes people a week of 15-minute increments to write the answer to that question. But it's very illuminating once you look at your history and see how young it started and where it came from and all the aspects of it. and so on. So you do 70 questions, and at the end of that, you are, in theory, have gone through the third step. And then you move on to the fourth step, so on through the rest of the steps. All the time working either from the big book, the 12 and 12, or from the personal stories in the big book. What that does for me, again, is reminds me every day of who I am, why I'm doing that writing, and what it means to me. And I'm learning a lot about myself and about my recovery as a result of it. I actually have been in 12-step programs more than 28 years. And this process is the best thing I've ever done in those programs, because in other 12-step programs, as many of you know, no one makes you do anything. And as Michelle's often said, and I love the phrase, you can be a tourist in the program. You don't have to do anything. No one makes you do anything. And no one makes you do this program either. But if you choose to, it's structure and it's discipline. And as Michelle said, and as I say, that's a thing I'm not good at. You know, it's not the thing I generally want to do, but it is the thing I need to do. My sponsor rarely comments on my writing, and I rarely comment on my sponsee's writing. It's not for me. It's for them. And so what they write and what they get out of it is really for them and not for me to decide whether it's been good or bad or whether they got it or didn't get it. It's the process that's important. I review my 10th step with my sponsor every day. What that does is it keeps me from getting into and accumulating resentments. It keeps me from keeping secrets. It keeps me from harboring fear, because I get it out on the table every night. You know, this is what I felt today. This is what I did today. This is how I reacted today. Now, he may say, you owe that guy an amend. Or he may say nothing. Or he may say, have you tried the fear prayer? You know, what are you doing about this? He isn't just listening when it comes to the 10th step. He's saying, are you applying your program? Are you working it? Are you improving? Are you learning from these experiences? I make a phone call every day to someone that I don't normally talk to, NDA. Again, what that does, or else I receive one, or I receive several each day, actually. And that keeps me, again, out of myself. So when someone calls, instead of me thinking about poor me, I'm thinking about poor them. And I get a chance to think outside myself for a minute and think about how I could help that person, maybe simply by just listening, or maybe I would have something to say that might help them in their day that particular day. But it's really, again, mainly for me that I get to remember over and over I'm part of a community of people who are trying hard not to debt, not to be irresponsible, trying hard to stay in the clarity, in the light, and not in the shadows and the vagueness of which we would normally find ourselves. I do this every day. I have for the last 5.5 years, I think it's been. As I say, I never miss a call. No matter where I'm at, I find a way to make a call. And I'm hardly ever late. And I expect that from my sponsees. That's just respectful. And sometimes when I have sponsees who can't do that, I tell them they have to try some other way. Because they'll have to learn to be respectful of my time before I can work with them. Otherwise, that isn't a healthy sponsee relationship. That's a codependent relationship. I think that showing up on time in full is a valuable life lesson, not just for this, but for all life. You know, to show up on time in full, be present, be honest, do what you can to help, be helpful. Those are all good things that are things that many of us have not yet learned or not learned well enough. It's not for everybody, this program. I think I remember the first time I heard of this process and I thought, these people are nuts. This is crazy. No one would do that. And as it points out, you know, in the big book, we try to find an easier, softer way. And most people will do that because that's what we always do, look for an easier, softer way. But it is oddly enough come to be my belief that this is the easier, softer way. Oddly enough, because I've had plenty of hardship, and I know that if I don't do this, I know what the consequences are. I know where I'll be and what I'll be doing and how painful that'll be for me and for everyone around me. It's been a great thing for me. I've learned a lot. I've met a lot of neat people, shared a lot, been a part of the human race. I didn't actually used to be part of the human race. I used to be kind of a detached observer. And that's been a great gift of it. And being part of this HAL program has really been a great thing, too, in that it's become nationally and internationally known. And people look now to Minnesota as a place to find sponsors. We get calls all the time from all over the country and all over the world, people looking for Minnesota sponsors because they've come to believe that there's a specialness about this, as I have too. I sponsor a woman in Israel, another one, and a guy in Syracuse, New York, another one in Hobbs, New Mexico. I sponsored a guy in England. There's lots of people who want help, and they're looking for a way to get it, and this they perceive as a way to do it. So it's neat to be a part of that. But as I say, it's not for everybody. It's for me, for now. And with that, I can't think of anything else to say. Thanks.
Does anybody have any questions? Thank you very much, Michelle and Frank. Hi, Chris. Does anybody have any questions? Would somebody mind grabbing all the questions? That would be such a huge help. And then, did you guys know about this part? Did you guys know about this part?
What?
Did you guys know about this part? Okay, good. How do you guys want to handle this? Do you want me to just read the question and then one of you guys can come up and answer it? Yeah? Okay. Oh, this is specifically for you, Frank. What are the 7 questions on the first 3 steps in your HAL program?
70.
70? Oh, I thought it was 7. I heard 7 also.
You did say 7. Oh,
okay.
70. It's 70.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's 70 questions, and you can get them from me. If you got an email, I'll be happy to email them to you, or give me your address, and I'll send them to you. I don't think so.
This is the second card I've gotten with this question now. What is the fear prayer?
In the HAL program, there's a in the 4th step, there are some forms. One's resentment, one's on harms, as I recall, and one's on fear. And on those forms, there's a place to check whether for instance, your resentment of someone, there's a fear associated with that. And with that, on that form is a little prayer that goes with that says, I can't remember exactly what it says, but basically, am I relying on myself or am I relying on an infinite? That's not the right word. Anybody remember? Is it infinite?
Finite
self or infinite God. And you ask yourself that question in the form of a prayer. There are some other fear prayers, too, in the big book. You can go online and find a big book search site. And if you just type in the word fear, it gives you all kind of references to fear prayers, and how to deal with fear.
This question is asking for a copy of the warning signs for mid-timers. And I know, Michelle, you were alluding to that, and that is on the website, is that right, in the Ways and Means?
I got this at the Tuesday meeting, but this came, I think, originally from the website, the Ways and Means.
It's posted right now on the Ways and Means on daminnesota.org. And then regarding the 70 questions, does somebody maybe want to start an email list to put your email on there? To get the information from Frank, would somebody...
I could just wait afterwards and people could come up. I'll scribble down their names.
Okay, Frank's saying that he can. You can come up and see him after the presentation and write down your name and you can get a copy of that. The next...
I think the Ways and Means would be on the national website,
anonymous.org. Oh. Okay, thanks, Anne. The Ways and Means newsletter is on debtorsanonymous.org on the national website. Okay. The next question is, you have a full-time job. How do you know you are an under-earner?
Let's see. You have a full-time job and you don't know if you're an under-earner or under-earning. I guess in my experience with under-earning, whether I knew when I didn't know or knew if I was an under-earner, when I was in that period where I really just didn't know if I was under-earning, I really just had to go to step one and keep asking my higher power to show me if I was under-earning in a situation, if I wasn't. It's kind of an unclear place to be because you do have a job, but it's maybe not enough to cover how you would want to live or whatever. I guess what I have done in that situation is I've had to really say to myself that part of my under-earning was picking and choosing what I thought I should work at and what I turned away. And I had to really be willing to show up with my higher power and take things to earn money, even if in my mind it was really humbling. So when I first realized I was an under-earner, I was self-employed, but that business wasn't earning any money at the time. So I worked part-time, and I had like three part-time jobs plus my own business. And I guess the only thing, what I did at that time is I was just really willing to earn. So I asked my higher power, you know, what do I need to do to earn money, or what do I need to do to earn money today? And I waited for the answers, and then I did that. I mean, it was very humbling, but that's what I did. And if my higher power would have said, you know, go wash windows, I would have done that. Or, you know, go clean homes, I would have done that. I would have done anything that I needed to do to earn money on that given day. And so I guess when people say that they're one catch I think that we have as under earners is we think we have to have the perfect job or the perfect resume or the perfect interview in order to earn money. So basically what we're doing as under earners is we are waiting to earn, or we are waiting to earn more money instead of saying, what can I do to earn money today? And so for somebody who has a job that they feel that they're under earning, I would say, you know, take it to your higher power in step one, and then also ask yourself, what else can I do today to earn money? And my thing was, what can I do Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday to earn money when it was really Saturday? You know, so I had to, once again, stay in the day and 24 hours at, you know, what am I trying to say? 24 hours at a time. What am I trying to say? One day at a time. and you know, I had to learn that I couldn't earn more money in the future if I wasn't willing to earn more on a given day. That was a huge revelation for me. It's like I would always put earning off into the future. I'll earn more money, oh, on Monday or Tuesday. But I wouldn't be willing to earn money on the day that I woke up. So that's all I have on that.
The next question is, how do you report your daily spending, and then how can I find a sponsor?
What I did with my daily spending, or what I have done, is I got a little notebook at Target, and it's just a little one that I can keep in my purse, and I bring it with me everywhere I go. And every time I spend money, I just write that down. So that's how I started recording. It was just with a little notebook that I could keep it, everything kind of organized in that. And then as far as finding a sponsor, I think it's starred on the phone list, at least in the Saturday morning group, or they raise their hands as to who's willing to be a sponsor. And sometimes it takes going to some meetings and some different meetings and just sitting there and see, you know, whose style or what type of personality or the person's recovery that would resonate with you. I mean, sometimes it does take just kind of sitting and watching for the person that you would want to be your sponsor. And, you know, that's how I found my sponsor, is that I had gone to different meetings, and then I really liked her recovery, and I wanted what she had. And that's what made me find her, is that I was observing other people and trying to see what they had in their recovery that I wanted for myself. And that does take a little bit of time, and it does take, which is kind of hard when you're first starting in DA, it does take kind of like, I don't want to say pushing, but you have to really kind of make sure you're still showing up and not get discouraged if you don't find that person right away. Because I really do believe that person is there. We just don't always know it until maybe we're ready. So, but the phone list is also a really good tool, and to watch in meetings to see who raises their hands for the sponsorship question.
Thanks, Michelle. And then another question is, what are the requirements for being a DA sponsor? And I guess my understanding is 90 days of not incurring unsecured debt. Do you have anything else to add to that? Okay, so that's the answer to that one. And then there's just a note here for Michelle. So I'm just going to give that to you.
Thank you. And is there another one?
Yeah, just for your prayer.
Someone with a better memory of than mine wrote out the fear prayer. God, please remove my fear of whatever and direct my attention to how you would have me be. That's one of them. There are several, as I said. Oh, I'd like to add a thing about sponsorship, finding a sponsor. I refer to that process as sponsor stalking. I'd go to meetings and I'd look around and I'd think, is this the one? Is this the one? Is this the one? You can get into too much perfectionism about that. You know, there are lots of people who raise their hand and say, I'll be a temporary sponsor. Get a temporary sponsor. Get started in the program. Don't make a perfect sponsor be the requirement for starting. Just start. You can always find the perfect sponsor as time goes on.
Thank you, Frank and Michelle. And what we're going to do is take another break, and Roger is going to reset the tape again. Make sure to go talk to Roger if you want to order a set of the cassette tapes or the CDs or an individual one. And then also there is food going in the back here. Renee is doing an awesome job with that. Cookies and tea and water and coffee and all kinds of good stuff. And then also we're going to send the seventh tradition basket around again after we meet again at 2:30. So we've got 20 minutes of a break.